Welcome to the One Player Podcast, the show on solitaire board games. I'm your host, Albert, and this is episode 331.
Sanctuary! Sanctuary!
You've lost me, Julius.
It's from Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah, I've never seen it. Any version.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard it's good. Or it was. It's off Broadway now, isn't it?
It's an older Disney movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I haven't seen that either.
But good
well,
try.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
yeah, it was.
It fit the general theme-ish idea, because it has
cathedrals. And I bet you a lot of other people get it.
Possibly. We'll see. No way to know until people tell us afterwards.
That's right. Well, so today's game is Red Cathedral. Hence the cathedral reference, the church reference. And this is a game about building St. Basil's Cathedral, and it's now part of a series. There's a Red Cathedral, and then recently White Castle came out, which is a game about Himeji Castle in Japan. And that's the theme. It's about buildings named after color, or the games are named after buildings of particular colors. It's a light theme, I guess you could say. A light theme to the series, but yeah, there we go. This is a rondel game with resource management and a few other things, but I think it's primarily a rondel game.
I'd say it's also a lot of resource management involved. Those are the two primary mechanics.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is designed by, let me see, Sheila Santos and Israel Sendrero, who also designed White Castle, and they also designed another game called Shinkansen Zero K, which I think means year zero maybe or something. And it's about the train game. It's a train game about building the train network in Japan for an upcoming Olympics. I remember what year that happened. I think 60s or 70s probably, maybe the 50s. So these are all different games by them. Really nice looking games and all this stuff. And instead of rambling, how about we jump into what's next? That was a summary, I guess. Components?
Go for it. I hear there's really nice components.
Yeah, there really are nice components in this. I will start with the cards. There's not too many cards, but there's I don't know how many cards it brings, but there's a bunch of cards that represent the cathedral that you're going to be building. There's three types of cards. Their base, there's a center sections of the towers, and then there's the roofs of the tower. And this is St. Basil's Cathedral in Russia, the very famous cathedral with the twisting towers and very colorful, very iconic. If you see it, you'll say, oh, yeah, that one. So this has all the cards, and on the back side, it has colorful picture of the building. The front side has some information of resources and points and things, resources you need to build it, points that you'll get for it, and money that you'll get for it. So there's all these cards. At the start of the game, there's also a small set of cards to determine how you're going to set up the cathedral. You're going to shuffle up the cards and draw one out based on the number of players, and it'll tell you how many cards to put in each row and column. For example, in a two-player game, you always have four columns, and each column will have a base, some number of middle sections, and then a tower at the top, a cap at the top. Not every column has a middle section, but they all have at least a base and a cap. So from what I've seen, the two-player game always has four of each type. So some columns are tall, some are short, it just varies. So you get those cards. There's also some cards for the guilds and the clergy. These cards, you're going to use, there's three different guilds. Each game, you're going to use one card from each guild plus one card from the clergy randomly. So that each time you play the game, you have different setup. There's a lot of stuff to randomize the setup in here. The cathedral, the cards, and other things that we'll talk about. These cards will give you extra actions that you could take or things you could do on your turn when you're on the rondel. And I'll get to that more later. Besides those cards, there's also some solo cards that are used for the solo game. It's a 1-4 player game. In the solo game, it represents your opponents as if you're playing a 2-player game. And they work pretty well. And we'll definitely talk more about that. Besides the cards, there's resources. I already mentioned, we already mentioned, it's a lot of resource management in here. There's two types of plastic resources. There are different gems. There's some green ones and some purple ones. There's also wooden resources, made from wood, but not representing good. One of them is gold. One of them is, I think, is wood, stone or clay.
Lumber, brick, stone.
Something. Hmm?
Lumber, brick, stone. And stone.
Stone, thank you. That was the one that I forgot. Gold, lumber, brick, and stone. Those are the resources.
Well, there's Julius also the green gems and the purple gems. And yes, I have the rules up.
Those are the plastic ones I mentioned first, yep. So those are the resources. There's enough. There should be enough in the game. The rules say if you don't have enough, just compensate somehow. And then there's some cardboard coins, little ones, functional, pretty, but small. And a number of tiles. There's two types of tiles. There's workshop tiles. When you start the game, you will place a workshop tile in each of the cathedral spaces on the different cards. You will gain those when you decide you're going to want to build one of those cathedral sections. So those are things you gain that will help you on your turn. Besides that, there's also resource tiles. You're going to, there's eight of them, and you're going to mix them up and place them on the board in the different rondel spaces. So that each game, each space gives you a different resource. Again, lots of randomization at the setup for this game. So each game plays differently. Okay. Besides that, the next comes the board. The board, really pretty art. That's the first thing you'll notice about the board. It's got a picture in the center. It's a circular picture of, looks like peasants or people in Russia. I'm not sure the time period. When was St. Basil's Cathedral built? I'm guessing sometime in the 1800s, late 1800s, but I really don't know. I'm just making that up. But they're peasants. And it's a picture there in the middle. Around the picture, there's a track where you're going to place the dice. There is... Okay, so let me describe how it works. The board is divided into four quadrants, represented by seasons. The seasons don't really mean anything other than the fact that there's four of them. The art sort of matches the seasons. Each quadrant will get one of those four cards that we drew at the beginning for the guilds or clergy. Again, you'll shuffle them up and place them in different spaces. Then the quadrants are subdivided into two spaces each for the dice tracks. Each dice space will also get one of those resource tokens, again, randomized. So what resources you get will be different each game. Then each of those spaces is subdivided again into three parts because they could each hold up to three dice, but they're considered one space each. So that's sort of the layout of the board. It's a circle with eight spaces going around. They could have different resource icons and guilds associated with them. Besides that, there is the score track on the outside, which has two lines. It has an influence track, which is sort of like fractional victory points, and prestige points, which are the whole victory points. As you're progressing on the victory point track, you'll get influence points, and they don't line up perfectly with the prestige points. Like at the beginning, I think five influence is one prestige, and slowly that diminishes until they get to 1-1. But it matters because as you're progressing, and sometimes you gain prestige points, sometimes you can gain or lose prestige points, which is a different rate than the influence. And besides all those things, there is finally the player board. The player board, it has all the information you need in there for the game in theory. It has nice little reference things. Once you've played it once or twice, you understand them and it's easy enough to follow. But there's space on the bottom describes the actions. Then there's space for the resources and the banners that you have. It's a ruler, and what's neat about it is it starts with banners on them, and then there's more space for resources. As you take banners off, it frees up space for the resources, so it kind of shows you how much you have. And the ruler counts off from 1-10. It's not inches; it's something less. Maybe it's centimeters. I guess it's just something to scale. But it's neat because you could quickly see how much you have from the ruler. It's a clever graphic design. On top, there's space for the workshop tiles that are on the cathedral card spaces. As you earn them, you'll place them on your board on different dice. The game, I haven't gotten to the dice yet, but there's five different colors of dice, and you can associate each of those workshop tiles with a different color die, which will give you more benefits later. Later, because we haven't started playing the game yet, have we? We're just talking about it at this point. And then in the center of the board, there's also space for the decorations that you could place on the cathedral as you finish the sections. There's doors, arches or windows, and flags at the top or crosses at the top of the towers. And each of those types of decorations can fit on a different type. The doors would go on the bases. Obviously, you come into the bottom of a building, not the top. The windows are in the middle sections and the crosses at the top of the towers. And I probably told you, I told you about everything but the dice. There's five dice in the game. They're five different colors. That's everything. That's the whole game right there in components. And the rule book and the box. It's a very small box. The size is, it's about 7 by 10 inches, about a B5 size sheet of paper, I think. And not too thick, so it's very compact and pretty full. Surprisingly full, actually, for the size of the box. You think they could have made it bigger, made it more roomy, but I do appreciate a small, compact box. So I thought that was pretty nice.
You did seem to have a slight critique of those player boards, though.
I do. I do have a couple. I like the player boards a lot. The information's in there. When you first play it, you don't realize all the information is on there. And I kept referring to the rulebook a lot. As you play more, you start saying, oh, wow, it really tells you everything here you could do, what you can't do. It's pretty clear once you know the rules well. So I think it'll be a little bit hard to learn from it. If you're teaching another person, you can say, oh, look, everything's right there. Just follow along with me. But actually, if I do have a critique, my one real critique is the colors. There's four player colors, green, red, yellow, and blue. And the way you keep track of who has which color, because it kind of matters in the game, is the top right corner of the board, the die symbol in that workshop space, is your player color. You'll also see that the resources and the die along the bottom in the actions track also match the color. But my inclination when I'm playing the game is whatever is the top left corner is what I think of as my color, not whatever's at the top right corner. I don't know why I just go to the top left, because when you're reading, you start reading from top left across to the right and then down, right? That kind of worked against me when I was playing with my son. I was playing blue, and the top left corner of my board was green, and he was playing green. So I got confused somewhere in the game and started moving his victory point marker instead of mine. He won.
You'd expect that in that case, wouldn't you?
You would, yeah. And, you know, who knows if we would have won anyway. Probably, but I'm able to at least blame it on that. But so I did find that little bit annoying. It's not too bad. It's just you want to be careful with that sort of thing. All in all, the game looks really nice. I like the art and everything. The design of it all is really, really pretty. Really, really nice to look at while you're playing. I like all of it, especially the board. I think the board is really, just really pretty. Yeah, I mean, it's a Euro game, but yeah, I guess it feels like you're building a church. You're gathering all the different resources you need and then placing them on the church. And you're taking your time to do things one at a time. You know, I'm going to gather all my resources first, then I'm going to start building. Once I've built, then I can decorate things. So all that feels thematic enough. Caveat being it is an abstract game. Or not an abstract, but a Euro game, and there's a lot of abstraction in it and things that probably don't really mean much. I think I'm becoming jaded with game themes lately. That may be the case. I don't ever feel like something is terribly unthematic and out of place. Like there's no astronauts in it or something like that, you know? It all works well. Nothing ever took me out of the theme. And the design like of the player board with the ruler on that, all that definitely helped to keep the game feeling thematic. So I think, yeah, the theme is pretty good. It works really well.
I mean, you're saying that you're jaded. That doesn't seem particularly fair because...
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I mean, the game seems... Yeah, okay, as long as you agree. Like, the game seems fine. You're putting together resources and making a building. I don't know what more it is that you would expect from the theme to be able to present.
I guess when I'm finished playing, I want to feel like a master builder of a cathedral. And that doesn't happen. Yeah, like I said, I've noticed lately I've been harsh on themes of games. And say, it doesn't feel like it. It feels like a game. Well, I mean, yes, it is a game, but is it doing anything that takes me away from the theme? No, not really. So yes, it is thematic. Absolutely.
You're picky.
I am, absolutely. And there's a lot of things that really work well. Like, I like how you build the church with all the cards and each and all the towers are different heights and all that. Each time you play, it's different. I think all that, it kind of, you feel like you're building something. And it is a building because you can see it in front of you on the board. So there definitely is a lot that adds to the theme. Let's move on to the rules.
Sure.
There's a lot. There's not a lot to the rules, but the rule book is pretty. It's a small book, right? Because it's a small box. I found it a little bit dense. I think the setup is, there's a lot to the setup. It's 2-page spread with a lot of text, so it's just a lot to go through. It's straightforward enough. Nothing is confusing. I didn't come across any things that where I got really confused and set things up incorrectly or anything like that. If you follow it all, it'll go through fine. It looks nice. There's examples of everything. The text, when you get to the gameplay, it describes each section one at a time of the different actions. There's a 2-page spread for the action. There, it's clearly laid out where there's notes to look at. And I found it really readable, really easy to find stuff. When I'm playing the game, I'm not sure about this action, what are my options here? Or what's the caveats I have to remember to worry about? Like in a 2-player game, like if my opponent, or even a solo game, I guess, if my opponent built a section above mine before I built mine, how does that work again? It was easy to find that in the rule book. I did not have any trouble with it at all. Easy to learn. So I was happy with it. Not a lot in the way of flavor text in it or anything, but you know, enough art and graphic design that I thought looked nice and thematic. The solo rules at the end are similar layout, but much shorter, only 2 pages, easy enough to follow. The scoring, I found the scoring rules maybe a little bit wordy in the way they were described, and a little bit confusing, but they were fine. I was happy with the rulebook, I think. I think it's a good rulebook. I have no complaints.
My perusal of it, without, you know, having played the game, it seems like it's fine. It pulls out, I like the use of the different colors to make it clear what's the different actions when it's going through. Seems fine to me.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I think it's a well done book. excuse me. So then that gets us to the gameplay, right? The heart of the game. This is, as we said, it's a rondel game with resource management. I've kind of told you a little bit about how the things are set up at the beginning, not in detail. Let me say a little bit more about that. At the beginning, I already told you about how you build the I keep wanting to call it castle, but it's a cathedral. How you build the cathedral at the beginning. And how you put those workshop tiles on it. The board, you're going to get those four guild cards, one of each type, and play them in a different quadrant of the board. And you're going to get the resource tiles and put them on each of the spaces, the dice spaces on the board. So that will very much randomize how the game is played. You're going to roll all the 5 dice, or actually you can do them one at a time. Start with the white one and roll it. Place it on the church, on wherever the cross resource space is. One of the 8 resources is a cross, which means it's an influence point, one of the small victory points. And the white die will go there. And after that, keep randomly pulling out another die and rolling it and placing it in the next space until you got 5 spaces in a row with dice. Not all 8 spaces start with a dice, just 5. Once you've done that and everybody set up their boards, you know, I did forget a couple little things. There's a couple things that start in the player board. There's banners, little wooden banners that you're going to have on your player board. And I did mention them, but I didn't really describe them in the components. Those will be used to basically claim one of the cathedral sections that you want to build. So you start with, you have 8 of those, 6 of those. And the goal of the final goal of the game is to first person to build all their sections. The game ends after that. Everybody else gets an action. And then whoever has the most points wins. So anyway. So you have your cathedrals, and you also on your board, you have the little wooden markers for the decorations you could build. That was kind of important. But a bit of a tangent. I was talking about the setup. We have set up the game, and now you're ready to take your turn. On your turn, you have 3 different choices. You could, and to me, they described this backwards. They should have started with the rondel section of the board. That's the last thing they describe. The first thing they describe is building the cathedral with the resources haven't been able to earn yet because you haven't been on the rondel. So I thought that was strange. So let's start with the rondel. On your turn, you can basically choose any one of the dice and move it however many spaces is showing on its face. So if the die is sitting with the three facing up, you can move it three spaces forward, and wherever it lands, that's the resources you get. Julius is disagreeing with me.
No, I'm
disagreeing with someone else. Okay.
People in the background.
Ambiance, yes.
Yes.
Other customers is the Starbucks. So So you will move that die, and wherever it lands, and that's the action you get to take. If there happens to be other dice in that space already, if you recall, I mentioned that the each space holds up to three dice. That's how many of the resource you get. So if you move it to a space and it says get a gold, and there's already one die there, you'll get two gold, one for the die you just moved and one for those already there. Some of the resources, the wood, stone, and brick, you actually get two per on each space. So if there's a die there and you move a die there, you'll get four. So you'll get the resources. Besides that, those guild cards also can have actions or things you could do on that turn. Some of them, each of the guilds does something different. But the things you could have is you could gain resources, you could gain money, you could trade resources, you could buy and sell resources, or you could gain influence, depending on the guild. And each card has two different things. You could do either one or both, or none. The third thing you could do when you do that rondel action is, I mentioned those workshop tiles that you could take from the cathedral as you claim a section, right?
You happen to have.
Yes. So when you claim one of those workshop tiles, they have an icon on it. Some of them are resources, some of them are other things. You can gain that. If I choose to move a green die and have a workshop tile on the green die on my board, then whenever I move the green die, I get whatever that tile has. So it could be, for example, every time I move the green die, I get a green gem, or I get an influence point, or I get two coins or something. Or some of them say, whenever I move the green die, also gain whatever the yellow die is at. So when you do these things, it kind of make your choices more interesting, basically, as you get in these workshop tiles, and get you more bang for your buck whenever you choose to move a specific die. Those are the things you could do when you move the die. Gain resources from the dice that are there, do stuff with the cards, and gain resources from your workshop tile if you have a tile in that die. Once you've done all those things, and you could choose which order you do those three types of things in, then you roll all the dice in that space, and your turn is done. And then the next person or the AI will go. That was the third action. The first action is build. If you've gained enough resources, you can now spend up to three resources on one turn to build a cathedral section. Some cathedral sections require only two. Many require three. Some require four. But you will place resources from your board onto the cathedral, up to three on any three on any cathedral spaces you have already claimed. And actually, you know what? I'm doing this backwards. This is the second action, not the first, but whatever. You will place the resources in any cathedral spaces you have claimed. You can mix and match any way you want, but you'll do up to three resources. If you have completed any of the cathedral sections, then you get money for it potentially. Some give money, some don't. And you get victory points for it. Influence points. They all give influence points. At that point, then you flip that card over, showing that it is built. And now, as these are being built, it goes from a picture that looks like a schematic, a blueprint, to a picture that looks like a built cathedral, which is a pretty nice effect. That you could also, once a cathedral section has been completely built, spend resources to put those decorations on it. That's part of the same action. And this is interesting because you could do it on your own cathedral section or an opponent's cathedral section. It doesn't matter whose it is, as long as it has already been built and doesn't already have a decoration on it. The reason you do these is because at the end of the game, whoever has the most control of a section, the most decorations and flags on it, will get the victory points for that section, or the majority of the victory points. And the other thing you could do by doing decorations, if you spend a couple extra resources, specifically the gems, you get more prestige points. Those are the big victory points. So there's a benefit to doing that, just so you could get a lot more points. Finally, the first action. Building cathedrals. You cannot build any cathedral section. First, you have to lay claim to it. You have to say, hey, I'm going to be the one working on this section. Nobody else is. And you do that by taking one of the banners from your board and putting it on the cathedral section and claiming the workshop tile that's on it. and put it on one of your spaces. You have to pay to use that workshop tile. If you don't want to pay or can't pay for it, you can just put it on face down, showing you've already you claimed it. It just doesn't give you any benefit from that point on. That was the first action, claiming those workshop tiles. You could claim up to those cathedral sections, and you could claim up to six because you have six banners. So that is basically the game right there. That's all the mechanics. It's, you know, if it's multiple players, you're going back and forth, taking turns doing one of these three things each turn until somebody has built their sixth section. At that point, everybody else gets another round and the game ends. You count up the victory points and see who has the most and wins. And the way the victory points work, I already mentioned, there's a couple of things. Mainly, you get points for the sections you've built. You also get points throughout the game, but at the end, you get points for the sections that are completed. Whoever, and now it's sort of an area of control, whoever controls the most of each tower gets a point for the tower. The other players get either half or a third. A third if it's a two-player game, half if it's more. The way the solo game works, it's only slightly different. In a solo game, you're still doing all the same stuff, but you're playing against an AI. So there's five cards for the AI, and they have the different actions the AI could take. You're going to shuffle those up at the beginning and lay them out in order. The actions are, I think, something like gain four victory points, I think. Gather resources. It always gathers four resources. Move four resources, which moves it from the space you gathered to the I'm going to build it space. And then on the I'm going to build a card, you can build a cathedral section that you have, that the AI gets to build a cathedral section that it has already claimed. And the fifth card is claim a cathedral section. Now these are shuffled up at the beginning, so you don't know what order it's going to, you'll know what order it is going to happen every time. But on those cards, you also put little extra workshop tiles that you have for the color dice. So it's also going to move a die each round. It'll move a die and then roll it, plus get that bonus thing at the bottom. So it's kind of doing two things each round. It feels kind of like a player, but it definitely doesn't score at the same rate that as a player does. But in the end, the score seems to be pretty competitive. So it seems to work pretty well. It's going to give you a decent score. Some games are definitely higher and lower, and it kind of depends on which order the cards start in. That's what I found. But you know, it's a workable AI. So that was a lot, Julius. Did you get any questions? I hope you wrote them down if you did.
I didn't have any questions per se. I did just want to ask a couple questions. Well, excuse me. I didn't have any questions based on what you said, but I had a couple of questions that I wanted to see if you had issues with it. One thing that I was curious about, so when you're playing through the game, you're essentially just sort of putting markers and tokens on cards in various places, sort of spread out. Did you have any issues of those going to the wrong places or just getting confused about those things? How easy of the system was that for keeping track of those things?
I found it pretty easy. Other than what I already mentioned with getting confused about which color I was, I found everything easy to keep track of. When you claim one of the cathedral sections, you get your banner and you put it on the cathedral section. And I put it standing up so it looks like there's a little wavy flag on the cathedral section. And it's pretty clear who owns each one. And so you know what you're working towards and where the resources are going.
That's fair.
Yeah, that worked pretty well. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I think was often an issue is at the end of the turn, forgetting to roll the dice on the space. I think that happens pretty often. And that's probably not a huge deal. I mean, if you're not sure if somebody did it, you could always just roll the dice on the space and that's probably fine. It might mess somebody's strategy that they've been planning on for the last, you know, two other players. And now it's like, oh, darn, that's not working out. And I got to think of my whole turn again.
But doesn't mess fine. You up if you're playing solo.
Oh yeah, if you're playing solo, it's fine. But that is the only thing I think that is really easy to forget. Everything else works. When I was playing solo, actually, I did sometimes forget. The solo AI is really easy to play. You look at what die it's moving. You move that die and you roll it, and then you do the action below it, and then you go again. So. And the action below it is always super easy. It's either move its marker on the victory point track or gain some resources or move a flag on from its, not it doesn't use a board, but from its area to one of the cathedral sections and take the workshop tile off of it. And that's all it does every turn. So it's always super fast to do. And I found that if I was playing and I really get myself into a fast rhythm, I could go too fast and forget something that way. So I had to slow down and be a little more methodical as I was playing. You know, and if, once in a while playing one of the games, I'd catch myself and it's like, ooh, I kind of got to step back a couple rounds and redo that because I forgot to give it something that would have changed things. So my thoughts on this game, I found that I liked the multiplayer a lot. I did not enjoy the solo game as much. I think it felt a little too dry solo. Multiplayer, it's more interesting. I don't know why. Maybe because solo, I'm going too fast, and so not really getting to enjoy it. When a solo game, I'm sitting there and thinking about things a lot more and taking my time and watching things as my opponent's playing. And solo, I'm taking my turn and then quickly doing the other thing, and then it's my turn again. So I don't have that extra downtime. And I guess I could just force it upon myself. But that, I guess that's just not my inclination. It's, you know, do the thing and then go again, because I don't want to waste a lot of time on its turn. And I could probably just spend more time thinking anyway on my turn. But it, I don't know. It did not feel satisfying. That I did find.
Was that because it was bland, you're saying?
See, that's the thing I don't get. It's mechanically, it's not really that different. From my point of view, my turns don't really change. Towards the end game, I think in a multiplayer game, you kind of know what your opponent wants to do and you're kind of preparing for that. And you don't have that as much in the solo game. It's a little more random. I mentioned how they're going to do the five cards in order. After each time they do the five cards, you're going to shuffle up which color dice you're moving in which order. So, you know, the first time you might be like white, green, red, blue, yellow. Next round, green might go first instead of white. So you kind of see what they're going to do ahead of time. You could definitely plan for it, which kind of, I guess, simulates the idea of your opponent, you knowing what they're probably headed towards based on what they're doing, what resources they're taking, that sort of thing. But I don't know what it is. I don't know why I didn't really enjoy it as much, but I definitely found I didn't enjoy it as much.
That is unexpected to me.
Is it? Yeah. I don't know what to say. I haven't played it with more than two people. I've played a few games with two people. And like four, maybe five solo games. And yeah, I definitely liked it multiplayer more. And you know, so the other game I mentioned, the Shinkansen one, that one I also played solo multiplayer, and I did not enjoy that one too much either. So I don't know, that one felt dry, and I'll admit I only played it one solo and one multiplayer and then kind of moved on from it. Maybe I should have given it more chances solo. I don't think I want to give it more chances multiplayer, but I think maybe I should have solo. But now I'm kind of scared about White Castle. I have that game too. And I got it for my birthday, but I haven't tried it yet. And I'm looking forward to trying it, but now I'm nervous because it's the third game from this design group. Yeah, I don't know. Definitely pretty game. It is interesting, but I found it more satisfying multiplayer. There's also an expansion for it, which I haven't played yet, but I do have it. It brings more variety. There's a lot more guilds. So when you play, you can replace some of the original guilds with different guilds. So totally change your types of actions. And I think there's other resources. There's a whole extension that you could add to your board. The whole section that goes below it. I don't have no idea what it does. And a new die. So there's a whole lot in that expansion. And maybe that's what the game needs for me. Maybe it just needs the expansion to make it more interesting. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, looking at the game, I hear your concerns that it's feels bland because it feels like another resource management game, but it's got the rondelle that ties into it, which adds, you know, the complexity of your turns about when does that you want to pull stuff off. So I would have expected it would have, you know, something interesting in there, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, it's fun to plan it ahead and whatnot and say, well, you know, if I could do this, then the next round I could get the die over here and then, you know, move another die there and now I get triple the resources or whatever. And that sort of planning is interesting. And in the solo game especially, you can see what dice the AI is going to move for the next few rounds. So you could definitely plan that ahead. And the fact that you're rolling the dice afterwards, that's a little chaos. So you can't plan perfectly, but you could definitely do some planning and thinking about what your choices are to maximize your game. I had some trouble also with the solo game. I found that the order the cards for the AI are in could really affect the game for them, it seemed to me. In an ideal situation for the AI, it'll first gather resources, then move them, and then build the cathedral. And if it do that each five rounds, it's already built the whole cathedral section, right? Or first claim a section, then get resources and whatnot. And each round it would do that. But if, for example, the first thing it's going to do is move the cathedral, or first it's going to build, then move, then gather resources, and then claim a section or something like that, then that means the first time around it's going to do it could only do the claim resources. Next round, it still can't build, but it could move the resources. Third round, it finally builds its first section. So at this point, it's two rounds behind you in terms of building, only because of the order. So it's, you know, potential for less points for him right there. Darn dumb luck. And it doesn't seem to... There doesn't seem to be anything that mitigates it. So, like, there's nothing that says, oh, if the order came out this way, he's still going to get other points some other way that'll balance it out. There's no balance there. So that was a little unfortunate. Actually, no, it was a little fortunate because those games I definitely won. And I think I won every game against the AI. there is one other...
So there's not a way of making it harder, you're saying.
I'm sure there can be, but not in the rules. In the rules that... No, you know, you could probably homebrew something, I guess. But yeah, no, the rules have nothing for making it harder. And one thing that I kept struggling with was the score track. I mentioned how the points at first are... The influence points don't equal the prestige, but at the end of the track, they do. They're 1-1. If you go above the 40 at the end of the track, you start adding 1. And it gets a little confusing if you're maybe tracking on the wrong track. It may not matter, but I know when I played my son, we had some confusion about that and which way we should score it. So, you know, do you... And there's a 0 space. It's not a space. It's not 0. So it goes from 40... to blank to 1, and all the other corner spaces are spaces. So there's a little bit of confusion at the very end there, but that only affects the very end of the game. And if you're careful about it, you'll be fine. See, I don't know. It's an interesting game. It's got some drawbacks, but it also has some pluses. Red Cathedral.
Well, very good. With that, do you think we've torn down the house?
Yes, I do.
Sounds good. All right. Have a good night, Albert.
All right.
And
bye-bye.
Good night, everyone else.
Thanks for listening. We love feedback, so we love hearing from you. You can reach me at julius@oneplayerpodcast.com or jlbird on BGG, and Albert can be reached at albert@oneplayerpodcast.com or fractaloon on BGG. Our website is oneplayerpodcast.com with the number 1, and we're also on Twitter at oneplayerpodcast. The intro music is copyright Angus and can be found at jamendo.com. The transition music is copyright by Dan Elduche Pancaldi, whose page is at danpancaldi.com. The One Player Podcast is protected under a Creative Commons Share Alike license. Thanks for listening.